It's Friday on Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Glad to be back for another day. I bet you can guess what we're going to start off talking with here in just a minute. Vikings NFL draft. Oh my goodness. What a night. We've talked about it, previewed it more than enough. Now we'll break down the first round here in just a few minutes. Yeah, what a night for the Vikings. I would say it was about as good as it could go, especially compared to how some of the mock drafts were suggesting things might go. Bobby Nightingale Jr. from the Star Tribune will chat with me in just a few minutes here, too, on the Twins sweep of the White Sox, four-game sweep of the White Sox. White Sox are terrible, but that helps the Twins feel a lot better about themselves, gets them in a much better spot in the standings, gives them some confidence, some momentum going into their next series and just the rest of the year. 7-13 looks ugly. 11-13 doesn't look great, but it looks a lot better than it did just a few days ago. So we'll see if they can sustain that the rest of the year. We'll talk Timberwolves too at the end of the show. Huge game tonight against the Suns, down 2-0. The Suns are going back home, so the Wolves a chance to really put their foot down on this series, to really put the gas pedal down and go for it tonight. I hope they do that for their sake. I'll talk about that here after we talk to Bobby Nightingale Jr. But first, like I said, what I miss, Vikings draft. So think about this. Vikings got J.J. McCarthy, quarterback Michigan, with the number 10 overall pick, trading up from 11 to 10 after an unusual first nine picks. So I'll get to that here in a minute. So they don't have to expend so much draft capital that they have to give up any other first round picks, which is a huge win. Lets them take Dallas Turner, edge rusher from Alabama, at number 17 after moving up from 23. They get two huge positions of need, two big time talents. JJ McCarthy, whatever you think of JJ McCarthy, getting him at 10 compared to where this draft was a huge value. And I'll explain that in a minute. And then being able to take Dallas Turner at 17, being able to take your first edge rusher in the first round in almost 20 years. I've been harping on this multiple times in the last few years. They have not taken an edge rusher since 2005. Erasmus James have not taken a talented, you know, first round edge rusher since then. A lot of people had Dallas Turner as a top 10 or at least a top 15 pick, top 15 talent. Offensive players ruled the draft. Top 14 players in the draft were all on offense. Kind of shows you where the game has gone lately. So the Vikings move up to get Dallas Turner. Now, it does take some draft capital, but think of where things were when the night started. All of the mock drafts suggesting what it might take for the Vikings to move up, A, for Drake May, if the Patriots were willing to trade at number 3, or B, to trade up, you know, maybe to 4 or 5 to get J.J. McCarthy. So the Drake May trade obviously didn't materialize, right? Caleb Williams goes number 1 to the Bears. Jaden Daniels goes number 2 to Washington. That was as expected. 3 was the first real intrigue of the draft. And I guess we'll never know exactly what the Patriots were asking for, or even if they, you know, even if the talks were serious to move up that high. Vikings ultimately don't do it. Patriots stay at 3. They take Drake May, the quarterback that had been linked perhaps to the Vikings if they'd been able, of course, to pull off that trade. So, gets to 4. Cardinals take Marvin Harrison Jr., the receiver from Ohio State. That was not a surprise at all. Minnesota native Joe Alt goes 5th to the Chargers. And that was another spot where you're thinking, okay, if the Vikings are going to trade, this is probably going to be the spot. This is going to be the spot they move up to. Some mocks were showing the Vikings were going to have to give up both of this year's firsts and next year's firsts. I think at the very least it would have taken both of this year's firsts and something else next year. Maybe a day two pick, a third round pick, something like that. A pretty heavy price to pay to move up and get a guy like J.J. McCarthy. But they would have had to pay it if the board was breaking a certain way. But they don't do it. They stay at 11 at that point. Then the Giants turn on the clock. They take Malik Nabers, wide receiver for LSU. Now, that was a scary point if you were the Vikings or if you were a Vikings fan, because you're sitting there and you're thinking, okay, Giants at 6, They've already got Daniel Jones, but they can get out of his contract after next season if they want to. Are they going to start over at quarterback? They don't. They go wide receiver. Alabama offensive tackle J.C. Latham goes seventh to the Titans. Then the first real shocker of the draft. Michael Penix Jr. goes eighth to the Falcons. Kirk Cousins signs a four-year deal, $100 million guaranteed, $180 million total value in the offseason to leave the Vikings, to go to the Falcons, to feel like maybe he's going to be the guy there for the long haul. Maybe he can retire there. Next thing you know, they draft a quarterback like barely a month later. I cannot believe this move. His camp has said to be perplexed. They knew that there was the possibility that Cousins' successor could be drafted in this draft, but they thought maybe it would be later. They don't understand why Atlanta, which seemingly is going not all in, but is seemingly making a push to be in the playoffs this year, wouldn't use the number 8 pick on a player that could help them right now. So that's a shocker. That is a huge, huge kind of pivot point in this draft, a huge kind of moment for a former Viking, Kirk Cousins, and kind of sets up the rest of the board. You know, Romeo Odunze from Washington, wide receiver, goes ninth to the Bears. Bears, by the way, cleaning up. Caleb Williams and get their wide receiver, and they already have all this offensive talent. They are going to be a force to be reckoned with next year. So that will be something to watch. All these teams in the NFC North could be formidable next year, but that's a story for another time. You get to 10. The Vikings are just one pick away from maybe just having J.J. McCarthy fall to them, but you also got the Raiders at 13, who are probably panicking now because they were linked to Michael Penix Jr., thinking, hey, maybe if Penix Jr. is going to fall all the way to us at 13, he's, you know, projected to go late first round, maybe second round on a lot of draft boards, things like that. Goes eighth, so the Raiders, you got to watch out for them, maybe making a trade up into that 10 spot. Vikings make a trade with the Jets into that 10th spot and then take J.J. McCarthy, 10th overall. First time in their history they have drafted a quarterback in the top 10. So there you have it. They get J.J. McCarthy. Don't have to give up a ton to get him, and that is huge, right? The Vikings have to trade a 4th and 5th rounder. They also get a 6th rounder back in the deal. So think about where we started the night with the Vikings maybe having to give up 3 first-round picks, as much as 3 first-round picks to get McCarthy, maybe more than that to get Drake May. Instead, they don't even have to give up another day 2 pick, not even another day 1 pick for sure, not even another first-round pick, not even a day 2 pick to get J.J. McCarthy. That's a huge win. Allows them to then make a trade up that's maybe a little bit bold, gave up a lot of capital to get Dallas Turner at 17. But if you look at it and you're thinking, okay, talent-wise, what are they going after here? They're going after premium positions. They're going after guys who look like they have top 15 grades in this draft. J.J. McCarthy and Dallas Turner, getting two of the top 15 players in a draft at positions of huge need, maybe the two biggest positions in the NFL right now, pass rusher and quarterback. If you consider that, it's a huge win. It's a huge win from where they started the night. It's a huge win for the franchise. It is, you know, like I said going into it, could be the biggest draft in their history in the first round, just in terms of what's at stake, what they've talked about doing. Didn't end up having to give up so much. Still have next year's first round pick. I know they only have a few picks next year. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah is saying, hey, there's ways around that. They're probably going to get a compensatory pick for Kirk Cousins signing in free agency, things like that. There's going to be stuff coming to them. You can always move down the board next year because you still have your first round pick. Things like that, add future picks, add future value, things like that. So I'm not so worried about that. They have to be ecstatic that they were able to keep next year's first round pick and still get two players like that. So as far as I'm concerned, even if they gave up a little bit of extra value to get Dallas Turner in that trade, it's a huge win from where they started the night. Got their quarterback, got an edge rusher too, didn't have to give up that other first round pick this year or next year, and now they can get to work on trying to make this thing a success, a long-term success going forward. Now, one extra interesting wrinkle It was reported on Thursday that the Vikings were one of two teams that had inquired about trading for Justin Herbert. You remember the Antonio Brown tweets about a week ago talking about trade possibilities with the Vikings and Chargers, saying it was close to a done deal. That doesn't sound like it was correct. However, it does sound like the Vikings at least inquired about the possibility of trading for Justin Herbert, were shot down pretty quickly. The logic there being that, you know, the Chargers may be thinking about starting over with Jim Harbaugh, and maybe Jim Harbaugh would be interested in drafting his former Michigan quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, who is now, of course, the Vikings quarterback. So keep that in the back of your mind. Keep in your mind what is going on in Atlanta with Kirk Cousins and them drafting Michael Penix Jr. I mean, he's got 2 years guaranteed. Like, they must be doing the Packers plan right now. They must be going the Jordan Love route, the Aaron Rodgers route, where they're thinking, okay, let him sit for a couple of years. We're just going to eat that part of the rookie contract. Let him be ready to go after 2 years. So it sounds like this is maybe just 2 years for Kirk Cousins in Atlanta. That could be it for him. We'll see. Fascinating. That was the fascinating part of this draft. It kind of upended that part of the draft. Vikings still get their guy. Raiders get shut out of the quarterback market. They've got to be wondering what's going on. But just a fascinating night. It's always fun, right? It's always a fun night. It's always crazy. This one, no exception.
Open a 5.15% annual percentage yield 9-month certificate from Royal Credit Union. Open now at rcu.org/certificate515. Early withdrawal penalties could reduce earnings and principal. APY accurate as of 4/26/24. Insured by NCUA.
Let's bring in Star Tribune Twins writer Bobby Nightingale right now. Bobby will be covering the series out against the Angels starting Friday. But Bobby, 4-game sweep for the Twins of the White Sox. White Sox are historically bad. Let's just put it that way. Right now, at least 3-22 now after the Twins beat them 6-3 on Thursday. The Twins were 7-13 before this series started, 11-13 now. What if anything, do we learn from these four games versus the 20 that preceded it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can look at it all individually and say, like, the offense is fixed, definitely. And, you know, like, Chris Paddock pitched 7 shutout innings. He's definitely fixed. And, you know, I don't know if you can make grand proclamations based off just sweeping the White Sox. But they did sweep the White Sox. I mean, I don't think you can take sweeps for granted. It definitely would have been disappointing if they didn't win the series. But winning all four games, one of them in a walk-off fashion, you know, I don't think that is a negative thing. So, but I do think you can take away, I mean, the team wasn't going to hit 190 for forever. Sure. At some point the offense was going to have to wake up. I do think that they've made some adjustments in terms of, they're not striking out quite as much, other than Eric Fetty made them look bad the other day. But strikeouts have been down probably for the past week, 10 days. You know, some guys are looking better, like Edward Julian hit 2 homers in this finale against the White Sox. He had a good series. So, I mean, I do think there's positive things to take away, that if it continues in Anaheim, they play the White Sox again next week. That I do think there's some positive momentum building for some guys, for sure.
Patrick Royce and I took the Twins to task pretty good on Monday's podcast. That was before the White Sox series started. We're like, 20 games in, 7-13. They just didn't look good. Not only were they statistically bad, the eye test didn't look good. And I had an emailer that was like, hey, I'm going to mark this day down when the Twins win the division. And now they've won 4 in a row against the White Sox. So what, in your mind, what did you see in the first 20 games? Was this a team where pretty much everything that could go wrong was going wrong? Was it a team with serious deficiencies that we should still worry about? How did you kind of characterize the start for a team that had high expectations going into the season?
Yeah, I think I was kind of probably in the middle of the two reactions you're talking about. Like, I wasn't hitting the panic button like I think some of the fan base was. There were definitely concerning signs. I mean, an entire offense was struggling. Louis Varland already demoted from the starting rotation. I mean, there are things that haven't gone right, obviously. You take Royce Lewis and Carlos Correa out, that had a huge impact on the lineup. But I did feel like, you know, getting swept by the Orioles, if that happens in July, you know, the Orioles are a good team. I mean, I don't think getting swept by them is, you know, the most shocking thing in the world, especially when you're down a few of your top players. But I do think just the offense as a whole, they had to do something different. It just wasn't working in terms of an entire team slumping at the same time. I do think some of the veteran additions they added haven't had the impact that they hoped. Like Carlos Santana's off to a slow start offensively. Kyle Farmer, who they kept as utility depth for, you know, above $6 million, which even he admitted he thought he was kind of going to be trade bait this offseason, hasn't got off to the start he's wanted at all. And he's still struggling. So, I mean, there are guys that, you know, I think the veteran depth, the guys that they were hoping to step in, and, you know, maybe they weren't expecting him to be like Willy Castro as your starting shortstop and Kyle Farmer as your everyday third baseman. You know, I don't think they were ever planning for that to happen, but, you know, those guys were supposed to be able to fill in a little bit better than they have been. Santana, the same thing, and they have struggled. I do think Chris Paddock, you know, his last start was standing, his first three starts. I thought that was concerning just in terms of there are really high hopes for him to kind of fill that Sonny Gray void. Louis Varland, I mean, you knew there was going to be kind of a learning curve. Can he take that next step as a starter? That was always a question. I feel like Paddock was kind of viewed coming into the season more as like a sure thing. Like, he's healthy now. He should be pitching great. And he's having trouble striking guys out and finishing at bats. So, I thought that was probably the more concerning part of the starting rotation, but I wasn't ready to just hit the panic button yet just because of the schedule they had.
Simeon Woods Richardson had a decent outing Thursday, I think five innings, gave up some hits, but only two runs, gets them to the bullpen, gets them another win. He had a really good outing, you know, in that doubleheader that kind of stabilized things, at least temporarily, when they were in Detroit. How much should he be counted on at this point? I mean, obviously they need him, but how much should they count on him?
I mean, I think he's an okay five, especially with his velocity ticking up. You look at kind of the other starting rotations and all the pitching injuries around the league. You know, I don't think there's any team like the Twins last year, I think, felt like they had luxury starting depth. You know, being able to start the year with Bailey Ober and Louis Varland in AAA, there just aren't many teams that have that luxury this year. And the Twins aren't one of those teams again either. So as a five starter, I think he's doing fine. He's performing kind of as expected. He's going to have his ups. He's going to have his downs. He's not going to be your most consistent guy. But as long as he can give you five innings and give you a puncher's chance to win, you know, I think that's kind of the expectations for him. And, you know, that was kind of the expectations for Louis Varland too. And he struggled the way he did, especially throwing strikes at the end there. So, you know, depth is going to be a concern if there's a ton of pitching injuries. They haven't had that yet. But if everyone's healthy, if Simeon Woods Richardson can kind of carry this velocity going forward, no reason why he can't be a capable, you know, competent fifth starter.
The bullpen has been largely effective. I mean, they've had their moments, but even, you know, kind of surviving without Jhon Duran, and it sounds like Duran could maybe join them on the road trip, as could Carlos Correa. You know, but we probably don't talk about the injuries enough. I mean, when you're missing Duran, Correa for part of the year, and then Royce Lewis for almost the entire season so far, those are three of your best players. Those are maybe even your three best players. Pablo Lopez, put him in the mix, and Byron Buxton. But how much do you think just flat out injuries explain some of this? And how much do you think the bullpen has, you know, maybe overachieved to a certain degree in the absence of Duran?
I mean, they had high hopes for the bullpen coming into the year. You know, the bullpen's so volatile that I don't know how much you can always read into that, but pitching the way they have without Duran, without Justin Topa, Thielbar hasn't been great since he came back from the injured list, but pitching without him for half the time so far, I've thought it stood up well. I mean, Griffin Jacks has been as good as they could have hoped. Brock Stewart's been lights out like he was last year. And Brock Stewart doesn't have like a long track record of this. So, I mean, I think people kind of assumed he'd be dominant, but we'll talk about a great sign seeing that. Cole Sands has been better than probably expectations. Cody Funderburk's been solid. So I do think the bullpen's stepped up in some absences. You add Jhon Duran back, you know, that moves. You can have Brock Stewart in the seventh inning, Griffin Jackson in the eighth, Duran in the ninth. And if it's Duran like usual, I mean, that's a pretty huge punch the last three innings when you have a lead. So I do think that group stepped up, and injuries are a part of it. I mean, you look around the league, there's been a lot of pitching injuries, and the Twins have been fortunate that hasn't really sunk them this kind of the same way. Like, I look at like the Guardians, Shane Bieber's lost for the season. Yeah. Gavin Williams, I just read, is getting shut down for a little bit. Tristan McKenzie, his elbow's not responding well. And he's talking about he may have regretted not having surgery last year. So you look at that. I mean, if the Twins were down four starters, where would their season be at, like some of these other teams? So I do feel like, yeah, it's played a part. It's obviously affected their offense. They're not the same when you take out Carlos Correa, who's hitting well at the beginning of the year. Royce Lewis brings that energy. But I do feel kind of like it's their injuries have been kind of in line with some of the other teams, just in different spots.
My sense with the pitching injuries is that it's a lot of the guys who are, everybody's maxing out on velocity. They're stressing their elbows in certain ways with sweepers, breaking balls, things like that. You know, the players want to say it's the pitch clock, and maybe there's probably not enough body of evidence to know one way or the other on that. What do you make of this? I know it's not a brand new phenomenon, but it feels like it's been particularly acute in 2024. And I know we've written about it already this year with just the proliferation and kind of talking to some of these Twins players about it.
I mean, I think it's just guys pushing their bodies to the max. I mean, you're throwing as hard as you can. You're trying to get the nastiest breaking balls. You can talk about, you know, the sticky stuff isn't there anymore. The pitch clock, everything probably factors in a tiny bit, but I think it's just guys are doing more than they ever have and pushing their bodies to limits. And, you know what? I mean, some guys are taking that risk. They know they're taking that risk and they're okay with that. You know, if that's the chance to get to the big leagues, if that's your chance to earn a big contract, it's hard not to say, you know, if I lose a year for Tommy John, but I have three great years in between, why would I not take that risk compared to throwing a little bit softer and maybe not? I mean, I remember talking about, like, Rocco Baldelli kind of mentioned it. Like, look at Simeon Woods Richardson when he wasn't throwing as hard last year. He got hit around at AAA. And now you look at him, he added 3 miles an hour. And now he's having success at the big league level. I mean, it's such a fine line, velocity and how much it makes your stuff a little bit better. But for guys, it's hard not to take that risk when the rewards are, you know, guaranteed millions of dollars.
It almost feels like this performance enhancing drug scandal that, you know, the steroid era, but clean. I'm not saying these guys are juicing to do it, but like the risks they were taking back then in order to, you know, try to hit home runs and make it to the major leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I always think it's kind of like the same trade-off, right? I mean, that was kind of the calculus in their heads is, you know, if you don't take steroids and you fall behind, you know, you're clean, but you may not have the success that you would have. And, you know, this is clean, but you look at kind of the same risk. I'm risking my elbow injury to have more success as a pitcher. And, you know, a lot of guys know they're making that trade-off. A lot of the Twins pitchers have had Tommy John surgery in the past. It's one of those, I think you just have to live with the risks. I think it's too hard to put the genie back in the bottle and teams are going to say, we're going to prioritize pitchers who don't throw as hard and stay healthy. Just because you look at like the college game, a lot of college pitchers are throwing 95 plus. Now you see it in high school where guys are throwing 90 and it's not like the craziest thing in a community anymore. Right. So, you know, it just velocity is king at every level.
Well, and everybody knows how to get it now. It's not like it's automatic, but there's all these, you know, places you can go, specialty places that show you, you know, repeatable mechanics and how to, you know, build strength, stuff like that. I don't think it's going to get better in terms of the injuries at this point, because you're right, the genie's kind of out of the bottle. If you can perform better, people are going to keep pushing their bodies to the limits, I would imagine. But yeah, it's an interesting topic, and we'll see if they can stay healthy on that front. A few more things for you, Bobby. One, Royce Lewis, obviously, he's missed all but three innings of this season. We'll see him in a few weeks, a month. I mean, he says he feels good. I'm sure he always wants to play. But how much has he shown his worth just in his absence right now? Because it just felt like that took the wind out of their sails at the start of the year. Like he's such production-wise, but also emotionally, he's such a big piece of what they do already, even after like 259 regular season plate appearances.
Yeah, it's funny when you like kind of look at his stats page, you kind of forget how little experience he has, but he's been so clutch in his career, and I just don't think you can replicate that. I mean, I know there's, you know, people who like don't believe that players are clutch and it's just kind of a chance thing, but you look at it, every time he's in a big situation, he comes back from an injury, he homers, he goes in the playoffs, he hits two homers in that game, he homers on opening day, he just lives for the big moments. And not having that in the lineup, that kind of sucked the wind out of their sails. So you see it a little bit. I mean, like Max Kepler comes back from the injured list. That was an automatic boost. you know, you I wonder if Carlos Correa will kind of have that similar impact if he's back in the next week. So it's just I don't think you can replicate just the guys that are proven. And I know it's kind of silly saying proven for a guy that's played, you know, under 100 games in his career, but he's proven he can step up in those moments and is willing to take the big swings. And talking to the pitching staff too, they're like, there's something different when he comes to the plate with the bases loaded. Like, you just assume four runs are going to come across, right, where that's not the case with everyone else. And the Twins have been so bad hitting with runners in scoring position this year. You just wonder, you know, if Royce Lewis was around, how much of a difference that would make.
Royal Credit Union Smart Checking Accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union Smart Checking Account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
How much do you think the Twins were surprised, rattled, annoyed, however you want to put it, by the 7-13 start? Because by all accounts, they think they're good. They, you know, made the playoffs, won a playoff series last year. There's all this talk, you know, going into the offseason of, hey, like, let's take the next step. We can, you know, we can be even better than this going forward. Like, it seemed like Rocco Baldelli was getting really annoyed at the brand of baseball they were playing, in particular, just the mistakes, the at-bats, just not finishing off hitters, not being able to, you know, execute pitches when they matter the most. How much do you think they were surprised by their 7-13 start and concerned by it too?
Yeah, I think concern was high. I mean, I think back to Sunday, they lost to the Tigers. I think it was 6-1, 6-2, something like that. And after the game, I mean, Kyle Farmer and Edward Julian were hitting in the batting cage for like 45 minutes straight after the game. Byron Buxton, Royce Lewis, and Trevor Larnach were in a corner of the clubhouse talking about hitting. Carlos Santana and Manuel Margot were talking in another corner, talking about hitting. So, I mean, you could tell it was kind of wearing on them. Like, okay, this has to turn up at some point. Obviously, the White Sox come to town, and, you know, that helps the vibes a little bit. But I do think concern was kind of growing in terms of being like, okay, we can't just keep saying it's early. We can't just keep brushing off saying, you know, we made the playoffs last year. We can assume we're going to make it again this year. So I do think it was growing. I do think there was some surprise the offense started off as poorly as it did. You know, that's maybe where the injuries, you take away Kepler, you take away Correa, you take away Lewis. You know, by most metrics, that's probably three of your top five, however you want to do it. You know, you can't plan for that during spring training, but I agree with you too, that Rocco is kind of, you can kind of sense the frustration just with the quality of at bats in terms of stop swinging for the fences. You know, if we're going to have to settle for singles, that's fine. But we got to start putting the ball in play more often. I think the strikeouts, especially in April when the ball's not flying as far, you think of like Byron Buxton when he thought he homered and it turned into a ball off the wall. You know, that stuff is going to happen early in the season when it's colder. You're not going to hit as many homers. That style of offense just isn't there. So I do think hitting off speed more, being more competitive at bats, which you've kind of seen in the past week, is finally turning where Rocco beforehand, I think, was just kind of frustrated with just kind of the trends that he was seeing in terms of quality of at bats.
And then, of course, they hit five home runs on Thursday, five of their six runs coming on solo home runs. Julian had a couple, like you said. Santana got his first. I mean, some other guys feeling good about themselves. It's almost like you have to feel sorry for Chicago. I'm sure that the Twins don't like, but even some of the quotes when they were beating him was like, man, this team came on the schedule at the right time. Like, they were, it's almost like you just don't hear teams talk about other teams like that, even if they're still trying to be respectful. Like, just it was kind of surprising to me just like how bad Chicago is and how much they seemed to relish getting to play them at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's sharks in the water. I remember, I covered the Reds 2 years ago, and they started off 3-22, same record, and brought it up to Kyle Farmer the other day, just saying, how much do you remember? And he's like, we were 3-22, and completely, like, wiped it out of his brain. But but I remember, I mean, it was kind of the same thing. I mean, the Reds that had, during that 3-22 start, had a week where they didn't have a lead for one inning that entire week. So you can tell when other teams, I mean, when they're struggling, you know, they're ready to pounce. But Rocco Baldelli got kind of asked the same thing, like, you know, is it nice that you're playing a struggling team like this? And he goes, hey, we're struggling too. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like the Twins entered the series in a great spot. So, you got to pounce when you can. The walk-off win, I felt like, was a huge thing.
Me too.
Had they lost that game with Pablo Lopez was struggling, got through four innings and velocity was down, you know, that could have been not a turning point in the season, but kind of a way to deflate kind of the momentum, and being able to get a win there, I feel like kept the sails high, and we'll see how far they can take it with Angels this weekend and then White Sox again next week.
Should there be any level of concern over that Lopez start and just the velocity being down, or was it just maybe a one-off where he had a bad inning and had to expend a lot of energy?
He threw 38 pitches that inning, and that's what he kind of attributes it to. So I think you kind of have to take it at face value. Obviously, if there's an injury to Pablo Lopez, I mean, that's probably as impactful as Royce Lewis out of the lineup for the rotation. So that'd be terrible news. But he still struck out three guys at the end of that inning, even with diminished velocity. So he said he felt fine physically. Rocco Baldelli afterwards said there wasn't anything concerning besides the fact that he had a rough outing. So fingers crossed that he'll make his next start and everything's okay there. But I always think that there's got to be a touch of concern, just all the pitching injuries these days when you see velocity down.
Final thing, is this sustainable? Do you feel like this will be a turning point? These four games against Chicago, like, confidence can go a long way. But also, like, they're not going to play, Chicago again soon, but you're not going to play teams quite like that for most of the season.
Yeah, but I do think just getting healthier is going to go a long way. Yeah. I mean, you add Max Kepler back to the lineup this week. If Neuron's back in the back of the bullpen on the road trip and Carlos Correa's back, you know, that's a different team than the one that started 7-13 and had trouble scoring all the time. And I do think you do have to give credit to Baltimore. I don't know how many wins they'll finish this season with, but if they were in the Central, they'd be pretty heavy division favorites. I mean, that's a great lineup, and they didn't even have to face Corbin Burns, the Twins themselves. So I just think the timing of that sweep just came at a bad time. Say that they got swept early in the season and then kind of played 500 from there on out, where they're winning two or losing two against the Tigers. I don't feel like it would have been as panicked. And the urgency would have been as high, but I just think they're getting healthy. They're feeling better about themselves. Playing the White Sox, like the players say, probably did come at the right time for them, just to turn a corner at least mentally a little bit. So this is still an offense that I believe in. Edward Julian, when he's right, Alex Kirilloff, Max Kepler, Carlos Correa. I mean, those guys are all solid hitters. And if Trevor Larnach turns into something, kind of what Matt Wallner gave him last year, if Carlos Santana starts looking like he used to, that just rounds out the lineup.
For sure it does. Well, follow Bobby's coverage out on the West Coast. Bobby Nightingale Jr., appreciate you hopping on, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff from Bobby as usual. One thing to consider, as bad as the White Sox are, 3-22, the rest of the AL Central looks better so far this year. Guardians 18-7, despite all those pitching injuries. That is huge for them. They're 6.5 games up on the Twins right now, leading the AL Central. Royals not too far behind the Guardians, 16-10. Tigers 14-11. So there is that pushover still. There is the White Sox just sitting there, but the rest of the division looking better this season. That could play a role in what you think of the Twins going forward. Can they compete in a meaningful way in the division if there's multiple teams that are good this year, as opposed to last year where there were not any good teams at all, really, aside from them eventually? So keep that in mind. The AL Central looking better so far this season. What will that mean? And again, a lot of those teams have already beaten up on the White Sox too. Poor White Sox, 3-22, already 15 games out of first place. Here it is, April 26th, 15 games out of first place. Imagine feeling like that. Imagine feeling your season's over in April. It was kind of feeling like that for the Twins just 4 days ago. Not anymore. You feel a little bit better about things now. We'll see if they can sustain that when they play the Angels tonight. Speaking of tonight, let's finish with the cooler. Timberwolves at Suns. Here's my thought for that. There were three teams in the NBA that played three games in the NBA on Thursday. All three of them were 2-0 series leads for the higher seed, the favored team, the team that had already had the two home games going into it. Timberwolves need to treat this game like the Nuggets treated their game with the Lakers. Nuggets prevail 112-105, take a commanding 3-0 lead. You cannot treat this game like it's expendable, like you don't have to have it. This is a game that can change momentum in the series. Treat this game like it's a meaningful game. Treat this game like it's one you have to have, just like the Nuggets did in really taking control of that series with the Lakers. Don't treat it like Cleveland did. Cleveland gets routed 121-83 by Orlando. And maybe this is what they call a gentleman's sweep. You lose game three, they come back stronger in game four, win, and then win game five back at home. That could certainly happen, but I don't want to see the Wolves mess around like this. I certainly think the Knicks were trying to win. They just got beaten by the 76ers last night, so that series 2-1 as well. But it looks like Cleveland kind of treated this game like it was expendable. Denver didn't. You can tell which team is a defending champ and which team is not in that scenario. So I will be curious to see how the Wolves come out, how they treat this game, how they treat being in the catbird seat. But nothing is won yet. Nothing is won right now. If you lose tonight, then the pressure, you know, there's still pressure on you to win that next game, to have to, you know, to get that series lead, to win a road game at some point. Might as well be tonight. We'll see if they can get that done. Speaking of done, that'll do it for me today. No Vikings picks today, as far as we know, unless they trade back into the second round somehow, second or third round. They don't have a second or third round pick, so be a pretty boring day for the Vikings in the draft, but plenty of other draft stuff coming up. We'll see what else they do over the weekend. Royce and I will have plenty to talk about on Monday. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Have a great rest of your Friday. Back at it again in a few days.